Hey everyone, and welcome to this Soapbox edition of the show. I'm Patrick Gray. Soapbox editions of this podcast are wholly sponsored. Everyone you hear on a Soapbox podcast paid to be here. And yeah, in this edition of the show, we are playing a small part in the launch of Chronicle's flagship product, Backstory. Chronicle is, of course, Alphabet's security spin-off, Alphabet being Google's parent company. And yeah, the launch of the company itself was announced about a year ago. And until now, Chronicle has only really had one product, which is VirusTotal Enterprise. But that all changed today when Chronicle launched Backstory at the RSA conference in the United States. So what is Backstory? I was lucky enough to see a demo before we recorded this interview last week, and I'm going to characterize it in a way that they probably won't like, but it's cloud splunk with a twist. So look, that's not 100% fair, but it is kind of a seam play. Basically, Backstory ingests logs from a bunch of different data sources, DNS lookup information, DHCP info, your EDR logs from CrowdStrike or Carbon Black, your web proxy logs, firewall alerts. And then it takes all of this data and structures it so that you can make use of it. Now, you get a nice pointy, clicky visualization sort of thing with timelines and stuff, which is, of course, very handy. But do keep in mind, your logs are now with the company that is responsible for VirusTotal. And, you know, they've got access to core Google infrastructure, which means they know how to process data at scale. And they also have very good intelligence. They've got very good threat intel. And, of course, they can apply various IOCs to the logs you've submitted, which, by the way, I should point out, they keep for 12 months. You can hold 12 months worth of data in your Backstory account. So one use case, of course, is doing the type of threat hunting threat hunters like to do. Backstory looks to be very good for that, especially, as I mentioned earlier, it's built on core Google infrastructure. So the average response time to a complicated query is basically negligible, as are the ingest processing times. But beyond that, you know, I think this is actually going to become quite a useful alerting platform. Seam deployments are very, very hard to pull off, and they're also very expensive, and it's easy to wind up with gaps in them, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But this is an easy way, in my mind, from what I've seen anyway, to get the same type of value. Now, I should point out too, Chronicle are also planning on collecting NetFlow. That is on the roadmap, and you know, boy oh boy, once you've got a company like Chronicle collecting NetFlow from all of their customers and analyzing it, that's what dreams are made of. The potential for greatness is certainly there, let's put it that way. Anyway, you probably want to hear what Chronicle has to say about its product instead of listening to me blab about it all day. So yeah, I recorded this interview with Chronicle co-founder Mike Wysak last week, and here's what he had to say about Backstory.
A year ago, we announced Chronicle as a company, and I was here on the podcast to talk about VirusTotal, which is our first product. VT was acquired by Google and moved into Chronicle when we graduated from X. And so just a short recap, you know, VT is one of the world's largest malware intelligence systems. It has over 1 billion files and gets more than 1 million new ones every day. It's simply a massive amount of information about malware. You know, how it operates, how it behaves, what it communicates with. You know, VT tells you about threats in the world. We have millions of free users and over 1,000 paid enterprise customers. The obvious next question when you give someone unlimited information about threats out in the world is, are any of these in my world, like my organization's network? And even more importantly, were these things ever in my environment and I just didn't catch them? It's a very simple question, but one that we find is very hard for enterprises to answer. So what we're announcing today is our very cool solution for this. It's Backstory. It's a global cloud platform where customers can upload security telemetry into a private layer where they can analyze it, hunt for threats, and investigate incidents.
It looks like a lot of the work you're doing on the back end with Backstory is in structuring a lot of event information that you're already collecting through, you know, things like DNS logs, DHCP logs, EDR logs, stuff like that. You're ingesting all of that and actually trying to timeline it and structure it and order it correctly so that it becomes meaningful. I mean, that's the idea here, isn't it?
Absolutely. Being able to do that at, you know, multi-petabyte scale in literally timeframes that allow you to witness what's happening now within the UI with minimal latency is actually a really hard problem and one that we're really proud of how we solved here.
Yeah. So why don't you just rattle off a list of the types of data that you ingest? Because as I understand it, yeah, DHCP, you're looking at things like web proxy logs, EDR, you're going to be supporting CrowdStrike and Carbon Black out of the gate. I imagine there's more coming there. What other stuff do you have coming in? I understand that NetFlow is on the roadmap.
NetFlow's on the roadmap, and it's one of those things that we're going to really focus on where customers are telling us to go. We're trying to focus on the most important things that we would want ourselves, given that a lot of us are practitioners in this space, and then allowing feedback from customers to help drive that direction.
So currently, it is just those things, or are there a few that I've missed?
DNS, DHCP, EDR logs, web proxy logs, NetFlow's on the horizon. That's what I have offhand right now. We're also ingesting alerts as well. So firewall alerts, alerts from other products as well, can be propagated into the UI. So you can see where they intersect with the behavior that your underlying asset was exhibiting at the point in time.
Now, you've shown me a demo of this, and it is quite, I hate using buzzwords, but it is pretty granular. I mean, you can, because you're collecting that sort of DHCP information, you can go right down and look at the history of someone's actual device, right? You can see that they've been beaconing to a known bad domain. You can see when that started. You can see events around that. I imagine a lot of the work that you've done in the last year has been around getting this data into some sort of coherent form. Is that assumption correct?
I mean, normalizing the data is obviously a challenge, but we're also working in a way to ingest raw logs as well and providing very fast search capabilities over those raw logs too. So while some data makes sense to store in a normalized fashion to facilitate very particular types of lookups, as we do branch out into raw logs and we're allowing, you know, arbitrary searches over that data as well, the differences between normalization and free search is going to try and blur within the product.
So I guess the obvious question is, what's the problem that this solves?
So the real problem to solve, actually, you know, I think it's best answered with a story. So when I was at Google working, I was working on, you know, part of the Aurora incident. And one of the things that we were sitting there and as we were trying to understand what resources we had available to us, we knew the command and control servers for the malware. And so that was one of the first times we actually started thinking about DNS in terms of security. So this is going back, you know, 10 years ago. But the real catch that we had was we knew these host names were bad. And we're like, we want to know everything in our network that's ever communicated with them. And that's actually where I met the co-founder of Chronicle, Shapur. He actually was working as an SRE helping manage Google's corporate DNS infrastructure. And he basically said, oh, I have logs of DNS resolutions. And we were like, really? This is amazing. And we were able to quickly able to use that data in Google systems to understand what were all of the machines that were actually impacted, and then use that to help initiate investigation or formal forensics work. So that was something that, you know, was almost a turning stone for me career-wise, as well as for him, because that was where we started to realize that the ability to have massive data and be able to search it in a really quick way was transformative in how we think about security. You know, another example would be, you know, flash forward 5-6 years from there, I was at a meeting at the Department of Homeland Security in Northern Virginia, and they passed out a list to about 20 of us in the room where they said, these have host names for known APT actors for their malware. If you have any traffic to these, you probably have a problem. And so I ran out to my car, I tethered to my laptop, and I checked our systems. And, you know, within a few seconds, I knew that, you know, Google's infrastructure was safe and we had never seen anything tangentially even related to these. The key here is that we were able to do that search very fast. And when I went back into the room, I actually saw everyone else was sitting in there asking, well, when would I have seen this? And, you know, the representative said, oh, 6 to 9 months ago. And literally everyone threw their hands up in the air. One person said, you know, if you told me it was 24 hours or 48 hours, maybe even a week, I would have had a chance. But you're telling me 6 to 9 months ago, I can't leverage this information. And if that idea that there was some sort of a delay there wasn't something that even occurred to me as, oh, I should check that. Like, I just searched everything and I knew we didn't have this problem. And that was one of those moments where you're like, well, this is a, having this scale of data and being able to search it in seconds is something that really, it really started to think like, this is something that we need to share with the world. This is something that every enterprise can benefit from, and it will help people think about security in a different mindset. I've always been on a little bit of a soapbox when I say that, you know, we're limited by the tools that we have. And so, you know, there's the old adage, if you only have a hammer, everything looks like a nail. And I think most tools have never been designed to think at a multi-petabyte scale, where you have maybe 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 or 10 petabytes of DNS logs alone.
That's a lot of lookups, man.
That's a lot of lookups.
You know, I'm just thinking too. I mean, there's been various approaches to this problem, right? I mean, I'm thinking about some of that full packet capture gear that was popular like 10 years ago. Things like Packet Loop, which was developed by a couple of Australians actually, and that was bought by Arbor Networks. We saw NetWitness go to RSA because they caught some Chinese APT activity when they were demoing to RSA. I think they were already in talks for acquisition, but whatever, that went to RSA. That tech sort of, as you know, that tech didn't quite pan out as the you know, as the amazing thing we all hoped it would. I mean, mostly because the storage requirements were insane, which is probably why RSA bought it, because they're owned by EMC, and you know, that's a great way to sell disk. And you know, we've seen other approaches, things like Splunk, which can be very powerful. But everybody I know who uses Splunk, I mean, Splunk is a massive project. Mm-hmm. You need to really have some experts to set it up correctly. I mean, it seems like what you're doing here is you're trying to unlock, you know, most of the value of something like Splunk, at least from a security context, but you're doing it with, you know, data sources that you already have. I mean, how am I going at selling your idea here? Because, you know, to me, that sounds pretty good.
I think you're pretty close. I think the key thing is, it's data over the long term. You know, we don't find out something
seriously
bad.
like when NetWitness and stuff was new. I mean, that was one of their pitches, right? Which is like, you know, here is a known bad domain. You can actually look through your stored packet captures and see what happened, and you know, see if this triggered 3 months ago or whatever. So other people have had a go at that, but yeah, I mean, 12 months instantly searchable is pretty cool. I'll give you that.
Definitely. I mean, like, if you're running Splunk, it's something you have to manage yourself. It's hard to hire good security people, right? Like, it's a very finite pool. And, you know, I've heard someone use a stat that the unemployment rate for security professionals is near zero. So why
it's like
do
minus
we make,
10.
it is minus 10. That's true. You know, you want to hire a Splunk team to manage Splunk, or you're going to have your security team dual hat and then also function as Splunk admins. And now they're managing the infrastructure, they're maintaining it. You have a very high cost there to build a tool that at the end of the day is supposed to help these people actually do security work. And you know, backstory is, in a sense, removes that. It's just lets security people do security, and it frees them from worrying about like, well, how much disk space do we have left? What's our software licensing cost looks like? It makes it predictable.
I also imagine too that you're going to be building out various features of this because you're going to be collecting everybody's data in aggregate. I mean, I imagine you'll have your own threat hunters working on that stuff and trying to find various patterns, various attack groups, and you'll be able to let people know. I mean, that's got to be part of the playbook here, right?
Yeah, I think as you sit down and you look at the nature of this, right? Like as you're able to get a aperture into trends as they emerge around the world. It does definitely afford a unique visibility point to be able to go over and then start investigating opportunities like that, you know, down the line.
Yeah. So you've spoken a lot about DNS and looking at beaconing domains. And one thing that gives me a little bit of pause there is, you know, you look at how some of the better crews are actually doing things these days. I mean, they can beacon out posting comments to Britney Spears' Instagram these days. I mean, other people are doing domain fronting or doing some stuff with encrypted SNI to, you know, obfuscate the true destination of a communication. So, I mean, that only gets you so far, right? So I wondered if you could talk through like some of the other use cases here that might help you with detection that don't really have anything to do with, you know, IP or domain-based beaconing.
So, I mean, I think that's one of the things when you start looking at stuff like EDR data being incorporated in the backstory. So you're not limited just to network connectivity, but you're able to pull in the idea of file reads, file writes, registry modifications. You're able to pull in mutex creation. So named mutexes would be available in there. And you're able to look at that data. So imagine, like, this is the part where this almost feels like black magic to me, is being able to say, like, what were the named mutexes on my particular laptop 8 months ago,
yeah,
at this particular point in time. And then you start looking at that. And as you start ingesting threat intel, as you start getting indicators of compromise, you're able to go back and actually get the backstory, able to go back and look at what happened in the past to understand, hey, was I owned? Did I get vandalized? And then the attackers left and I didn't even know. Because if I take that information, I take those IOCs today and I put them in my, you know, intrusion detection system, or I scan the data that I have available, I have no hits. But the question is, we only know what's bad at the point we find out. And then if you try and look back, we're limited by most enterprises, 7, 10, maybe 30 days. Being able to look back at the long haul actually gives you a higher level of assurance that your system is secure today. And we've never really thought about, I think, as an industry, we thought about security in that retroactive mode. It's always like, you know, I like to say point in time forward. And this is a chance to actually say, well, the more I know I was safe up until now gives me more assurance and trust in what I have versus just looking forward blindly.
No, that makes a lot of sense. But I mean, the next question is, okay, where are these IOCs coming from? I mean, are you giving, I'd imagine you're going to give customers the option to feed their own IOCs into their instance or their account, right? Because I'm guessing it's more of like just an account in your bigger system. So, you know, they might have a list of bad domains that have been targeting their vertical sector that's been given to them by whoever, maybe a government agency. They can feed them in and, you know, see if they're getting any hits. But I'm guessing also part of the service that you're going to be offering is you will be providing some of that threat intelligence. Is that right? And you know, I mean, you got a fair bit of it, courtesy of VirusTotal already.
Yeah, definitely. So it's an area we're actually looking at a lot. We have obviously any references to things that exist in VirusTotal. We actually have what we call insight panels within the UI that will say, hey, you're looking at a domain and VirusTotal knows a lot about it. Click here to jump over to VirusTotal.
Just a question there. Like, you know, you mentioned before like registry changes. Does VirusTotal actually capture information about, like, say, this sample that was submitted to us makes this registry change? Because I can't imagine it really would it?
So VirusTotal does detonate in sandboxes, and they actually do have, for some percentage of the files, they actually do have behavioral reports. So they actually do know when this file runs, it drops a copy of itself and it puts it with a random file name in the Windows directory or something like that. So VirusTotal does have a fairly large repository of behavioral detonation information for files.
That's handy.
But just apart from VT though, right? We also have we're also launching a threat feed that's called Uppercase. And Uppercase is our own internal sourced threat signals, which will be made available within Backstory, exclusively within Backstory, actually. And we're also working with a bunch of third-party partners. So right now at launch, we're going to have Avast and Proofpoint there. Well, they'll be providing data to us, which we will then continuously cross-correlate with activity that we have from an enterprise within Backstory itself. So as that ecosystem grows and as that develops, it's going to get even richer. I almost forgot, we also have a threat feed from the Department of Homeland Security in the US as well. So that's also already being available to the few customers who are actually using Backstory right now.
Okay, so I've got another question for you. Come on. I mean, we're recording this just before RSA. This is obviously, this podcast is going out just after you've announced this product. Why have you not said herpa derpa 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 machine learning? Why? Why, Mike? Tell me.
you know, there's low hanging fruit here, right? Like,
that's another cliche. We can tick that one off, the low hanging fruit.
We can go back and forth on this all day. one of the things that, like, you know, think about the threat feeds for a second, right? As data comes in, we're constantly reevaluating new indicators and new threat information against a year of data if we have that much data for you. So you're constantly getting retroactive scanning without any real management. Like no SIM can do that. There's no real platform in the world that's able to do that constant, you know, reassurance and revalidation of all of that. And
it's doing that automatically as well, right? Like
it's doing it automatically. Yeah. So as these feeds are turned on, they just start showing alerts.
But how deep are you going? Are you going to go down to like that registry key change depth, or are you going to be looking more for, you know, the dumb stuff like file hashes and IPs?
It's one of those things where it's expanding right now, right? So, you know, what can be expressed within like a Styx taxi feed or something like that is something that we're able to go over and cross correlate. The number of types of indicators that can be leveraged is simply one of those things that's currently just only going to grow and get better. It's one of the beautiful parts of, you know, a cloud platform like this. You know, what's there today may be tenfold tomorrow. And so it's kind of hard to nail down exactly what's going to be supported at any point in time.
That makes sense. Now, look, you're coming straight out of the gate with support for Carbon Black and also CrowdStrike. I'm just wondering like what it was like working with them on this, because I would have thought you're kind of, to a degree, you're almost kind of stripping away a point of differentiation between those two companies who are, you know, highly competitive. You know, how did you get them to go along with being partners on this, right? Because to a degree, you're just stripping away the platform component of what they're offering and turning them into agents for your thing.
I mean, really, I view this as a data retention problem. You know, the data that's available to a customer of either one of those, the retention and searchability of it is fairly limited. They were able to leverage the fact that we have the ridiculously awesome power of Google's core infrastructure behind us. So, you know, if they're the ones who are collecting the data and making it available to customers, but then we're able to take that, store it, and then make it searchable over the long haul, it doesn't necessarily compete with them or strip anything away. I think it actually makes both of their solutions more competitive on their actual features and capabilities.
So who's using this now? Because I'd imagine you would have had some trial users giving it a go. Like what types of companies have been using this, and what have they been, you know, using it to do? Because I imagine, you know, like people create a technology and they expect people to do X with it, and then they give it to people and they start finding a completely different set of uses for it. Has that been your experience?
Definitely. I think it's one of the most exciting parts of a project like this is seeing how people use it. I always like to use the analogy that, you know, if you used email and used a web-based email before Gmail launched, the way that you used email is very different than the way you use email today, because you had a 5 megabyte inbox, you would delete every message after you replied, and you live like that. But now for, I think most of us, our email inboxes are our personal file storage cabinets. I know I have emails to myself with to-do lists. I've emailed myself photos that I want to remember to do something with. And it's changed our behaviors because the tool became more advanced. And I think that's what Backstory is going to do. I think, you know, we have our own vision for how we use it, but the unique cases that people who are actually in the trenches are going to say, hey, you know what? I could use Backstory to solve this particular problem. And they're going to come up with things that we never thought of. And I hope they do, because I don't want to assume I'm the smartest person in the room ever.
But have you had trial users out there doing unexpected things already, or have you just been completely under wraps at this point?
We actually have a fairly robust community of people who have been piloting and alpha and beta testing Backstory. And honestly, they run the gamut. Some of them have 500 employees, and some of them have 500,000 endpoints in their inventory. They run the gamut from manufacturing to health insurance to energy with oil and gas.
How are you scaling? I'd imagine this, like, just operating at that sort of scale as a cloud service, right? Like, I mean, how are you ingesting information from an organization with 500,000 endpoints?
I mean, the real simple answers were built on core Google infrastructure. So,
yeah, that helps. So
I don't know of any other magic answer to that. Like, I think there's a lot of insights that our engineering team is really top notch. They have a lot of them moved over from Google proper to become Chronicle employees. And a half of them or so came from the outside. And so we have this really good divergence that we have some people who have experience building systems that, like, hey, this needs to scale to handle a million writes per second. And you have some other people who are like, hey, I've worked at other companies. I never did something at that scale before, but these are actually the challenges that they want to solve. And you get that together, you let them gel, and you end up with actually something really cool. And I think that's what we have here.
So who's this for, right? I mean, is this for large enterprises who have threat hunt teams? Is this for any enterprise that has a security team? Like, who is the most sort of logical, you know, what's the sort of logical user class, if you will?
To be honest, I think it's every company, and I'm biased, I think it's every company that has any chance to concern themselves with security. If you're a company that has an internal threat hunting team where you're actively looking for anomalous behavior on your network, you're going to have better insights into that behavior with Backstory than if you didn't have Backstory. But even if you're a smaller company, you know, if you're in, we've worked with some NGOs. As you sit down, you look at small organizations and you look at big ones, they still have security concerns. They may not have someone who can sit down and dig through this data on a daily basis. But when they have even an AV alert that says, hey, suspicious file, and they have someone who understands that, they can go over and look at Backstory and say, was there anything else on here that triggered any alarms? Do they have any other watch list alerts here? Did anything else happen at all? And being able to have that is something that smaller organizations never had the budget or the resources or the technical know-how to get that data centralized and be able to then go over and do searches on it. So we've always regarded this as something that's tied for, you know, the big guys, the Googles of the world who have a threat intel team. But really what we're offering is a way to have a canonical log of security data that's happening on your enterprise, and then being able to go back and ask it, what happened here? It's, you know, you can see a naming scheme between Chronicle and Backstory. We're trying to keep that log of what's happening for security purposes on any and every enterprise.
You've mentioned too, you know, a few times people searching through this and, you know, the store of data that helps them, you know, go back and look at things. But I'd imagine for a lot of companies, particularly the smaller ones, they're going to be much more interested in this when it is effectively a high quality alerting platform. Do you see that use case being one that people are going to jump on down the track?
Absolutely. I think it's a use case that will happen today even. We have the ability to have those alerts coming in from the threat feeds and the partner data that we're already ingesting. And then you're actually going to get something new. You're going to get these retroactive detections. You're going to get alerts that say, hey, 3 months ago, this machine was compromised by this, or this machine was exhibiting this behavior. And that opens up a whole new world of opportunities to actually consider, maybe we should reimage that machine. Maybe we should pull the hard drive, replace it, and then reimage it. But it lets you at least know there's a reason to not trust that particular device in an absolute term. Customers will tell us, you guys know when there's bad stuff. Please tell me when it's on my network. And that's kind of an obvious problem for us to solve here.
Now, look, you know, one of the key selling points here that you're pretty, you know, you're pretty keen to emphasize is the speed, right? We've heard you mention multiple times that it's, you know, that it's based on, you know, core Google infrastructure, that it's very, very fast, petabyte scale. You know, I mean, try to put that into some real world context for us. When you say fast, how fast is this?
So our average response time for when you do a search is about 250 milliseconds. So there's no waiting minutes or hours to get an answer. It's just 250 milliseconds. Now the cool thing with that is that doesn't matter if you have a terabyte of data ingested or you have, you know, 5 petabytes of data ingested. We're going to get you those results in roughly that 250 milliseconds. And so that's, like, for me is, I don't want to say game changing because that's another cliche, but I wanted to say it's behavior changing. And what I mean by that is, you know, people are very susceptible to how fast things are. And if something is perceived as being slow, psychologists will tell you they tend to do it less often. The faster a web page loads, the more engagement people get. And so even thinking about that as a key metric just tells you that the faster we can make Backstory, the more usage it will get, which is actually good because we believe that will actually improve security for machines out there. The other thing which I really think is amazing too is our indexing and processing time. So when a customer streams, say, a particular log entry. I'll just use DNS for example. They send us that log line there. From when we get it to when that's visible, scored, ranked, and indexed in the UI, you know, on average, it's less than 2 or 3 seconds. That's amazing because I've worked with so many different tools over my career where I see, well, you know, the ingester for this particular log source is 6 hours behind now. This is 12 hours behind. And so then what happens there? A SOC analyst sits down at their keyboard and they see a ticket. They say, I have to look at this machine. And they're not entirely sure, do they have all of the context that they need? Am I looking at, if it's this particular thing, I might have these data up to date, but this data is not. One of the demos I've been loving to do with customers is, you know, I have a server that's behind a backstory network. And I'll say, hey, shout out a random domain name, and I'll just ping it. And then I'll go to the UI, scroll over, and it's there already, cataloged for prevalence, identified as a domain that's new to my enterprise, all that. And that's like an unscripted live test. Yeah. And you can just see that this is showing
now. I mean, that's, you know, that's fun, right? Like, I get that. Hey, a quick question too. Like, how are you actually ingest, like from the user side, how do they set this up? Do they have to like just get some sort of API key from you, and then, you know, how do they actually connect stuff through to their backstory account?
So we actually have a bunch of ways. What we wanted to try and do, and one of the reasons why we worked with several dozen pilot customers to help round out this process, was we knew we would see any and every possible solution. We worked with some customers that had no log management at all. And it was like, hey, help us collect our logs and help us get them to you because we want to. And then some of them already had fairly sophisticated centralized logging infrastructure that was running on Splunk, or they were doing something with Elk or anything down that line. And what we developed actually was a whole suite of different methods to do this type of work. You know, we can obviously ingest syslog data, they can send that to us, but then we can also go over and use, we have a forwarder app that people can actually install on their existing Splunk instances, which will basically, you know, as it works as a splitter, it streams the data to us as well as sending it to their Splunk instance as well. So that if they're already working and they have logs centralized and they're putting it there, we can just pull them out of Splunk. And then we'll have them within a few seconds, and that makes it easy there for them. All sorts of different ways that people have logs stored in. Like,
but I mean, I'm guessing for a lot of people, it's just going to be like enable syslog forward over there.
It's pretty simple.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, that's the that's the simple answer. Now let's talk about cost, right? Because where I can, I like to be able to ask sponsors like what they're charging for their tech. You know, I'm an enterprise with say 5,000 seats. What's this cost me?
The key point for backstory in terms of pricing is it's flat rate user pricing. And user is defined as the number of EMPs and temps, the number of employees, the number of temporary employees that you have. So it's something, first off, it's a predictable thing. If you don't have any headcount growth or it's net negative, net zero for the year, your costs roughly stay the same. Our general approach here is, we want your cost to be predictable. We also want to encourage you to put as much data into the platform as possible, because we think that's going to actually improve security for everyone over the long term.
Yeah, so, well, I mean, once you collect all that information in aggregate, you can start doing some cool stuff with it. I mean, one of the reasons I'm particularly interested to find out about pricing from Chronicle is because, you know, Virus Total Enterprise is quite reasonably priced for what it is, right? So I just wonder, is this the sort of thing where you're going to market and people are going to be bowled over at how cheap it is? Or is this priced much more along the lines of, hey, this is, you know, normally priced enterprise security software or, cloud service?
No, I think what you're going to see here is you're going to basically find probably on average, the cost to deploy backstory is going to be roughly 50% of what people are already spending today for equivalent
solutions.
On what
exactly?
If they're spending that on Splunk, or they're trying to even do it themselves in terms of headcount with Elk and infrastructure and all the stuff that goes along with that. And I think you're going to find people basically being bowled over by this. They're going to get bowled over by what we're asking in terms of pricing, the fact that there's no hardware or there's no management cost for that. And the pricing is basically going to be fixed.
All right. Well, Mike Wysak, thank you so much for joining us on Soapbox to really talk through what Chronicle is doing. You know, we've had a lot of anticipation there. I can only imagine how hard you've been working on this over the last 12 months. So yeah, congratulations. Thanks for joining us, and I hope you survive RSA.
Thanks, Patrick. It was great to chat with you again.
That was Mike Wysak there. He is the co-founder and chief security officer of Chronicle. And yeah, you can check out Chronicle at chronicle.security. Big thanks to Chronicle for sponsoring this edition of the Risky Biz Soapbox. And that is it for this podcast. I'll be back tomorrow with another weekly news edition. But until then, I've been Patrick Gray. Thanks for listening.